Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Vlad Irakcheyev, welcome to the REI Diamond Show. How are you doing today?
Thanks so much for having me. I really like and, you know, I love the show. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you reaching out. I was looking forward to getting our episode. I am here in Chicago where I record most of my, at least in the summertime. I like to be down in Florida if I can in the winter. Whereabouts are you recording from today?
I'm in Jersey.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So I grew up in Philadelphia right outside, and that's, you know, I moved to Chicago and listeners know that. Is that your primary market or do you also invest throughout the country?
Yeah. The thing is, I'm a real estate agent here in New Jersey. So I do single family residences here in Jersey. I sell them, I buy them for others. I do some flips here as well. And that's how I started my real estate career. In fact, I had a single family rental right outside of Philly in Cherry Hill. So, you know, it was going great. It was working great. But shortly after, I realized that I wanted to scale. And in order for me to scale faster, I started leaning towards multifamily more. So right now we are buying in Sunbelt areas and the Midwest. Primarily, if you want to know the target markets, I'm very particular where I buy. It's in Texas and Kansas. So these are the two markets that I have been buying so far. And recently, I have been exploring the Carolinas market as well.
Okay. So you've made a switch a little bit here to multifamily. Are you? Do you own units and projects in both Texas and Kansas right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Primarily, we do JVs and syndications when it comes to our acquisitions. It kind of varies depending on the purchase price. So obviously, we can't buy, you know, $10 million or $15 million properties ourselves. So we pool our money together with passive investors, with investors that want to diversify their portfolios, that want to invest in real hard assets. They invest with us into apartment buildings. And of course, we take debt for the rest. And we improve the properties over 5 years and then sell it and, you know, move on to the next ones.
Okay. So are you the limited or the general partner in these deals?
Yeah, I'm always a GP. Okay. I am the operator in them. When it comes to that, like I said, how I started is I joined a multifamily mastermind, and this bunch of them out there, and I interviewed with a lot, and I've joined Jake and Gino. They are a multifamily mastermind and a community. They're all over the United States, and it costs some money. But let me tell you, if you need education and networking, these are the places where you have to be. In my opinion, it's like this. If you want to learn how to ski, you can go up the mountain 20 times, fall down 20 times, and learn by bruising yourself and breaking maybe a few bones. But if you really want to know the proper way of ski, take a lesson, right? They'll teach you exactly what you need to do. Same thing in real estate or multifamily. So instead of doing it all by yourself, because it's a team sport when it comes to multifamily, I joined the mentorship, connected with groups of people that are buying and doing business in Texas. And that's exactly how I got started, by joining a mentor. So yeah, I'm a GP in all my deals.
Okay, nice. So why Kansas? That's Midwest, stable market. Is there a specific city that sort of makes sense in Kansas? Do you just know a great operator? Why did we select that state?
Yeah, it's actually Kansas City. I wanted to say, you know, because Kansas City actually splits on the Kansas and the Missouri side. So when I say Kansas, it's, you know, let's just say Kansas City. It's easier because when I, you know, many times I say Missouri and people like, what is that? So they don't even know. So I just say Kansas. But yeah, Kansas City has huge growth from what I've seen. If you go there and take a look at it, all you see is construction going on. There's a lot of projects happening. They just built a $2 billion new airport. Then you have a huge project when it comes to soccer, right? So the next World Cup, they're going to have games there. They're building stadiums. You have influx of businesses and people are going into the town. So the growth is there. Additionally, a lot of people think, or if you follow the trends, places like Arizona maybe peaked or unachievable because they already have maximum growth, some say. So a lot of people going from there to Midwest. Additionally, if you look at, let's say, Houston, where insurances and taxes are kind of killing a lot of deals, and because I know it, because it's killing deals for us, because I'm in Houston too. When you look at the Midwest, it's not as bad as the coastal areas like Florida or Houston, for example, where insurance has really doubled in the last year. So that's another. And of course, it's a red state. It's landlord friendly. You know, it's very catered towards landlords and people that own real estate. So
you have a project in Kansas City now?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, we purchased 40 units. And we purchased it now, and we very active on making a lot of changes in that asset. We love it because there's huge shortage when it comes to housing, and of course apartments. As we see now, we're tracking people who can afford to buy a house versus rent, right? So the difference between renting and buying is the largest right now of, I don't know, since last 50 years, if I'm not mistaken. So a lot of people cannot really afford to buy a house. So they have to rent, right? Basic human need, food, clothing, apartments. So I'm giving them something that they really, I mean, they're not going to go homeless. So this is the idea behind me going into Kansas.
So what was the purchase price and the rents when you bought it? And then maybe what is your target rent when you're done the stabilizing? And about how far are you into that process?
Sure, yeah. We purchased at $50,000 per unit. Total purchase price was $2 million and then some. Closing costs and stuff, but it's $50,000 per door. And we got it direct off-market. I actually cold-called, believe it or not. I went direct to seller and got that building off of a guy who's basically ready to retire and he wanted to sell. So the rents were $600. Our target rent is $950. And we're able to hike up the rents without doing too much. Because if you think about it, the rents were so much below market that people who live there, they never complained, they didn't care. So as soon as we started hiking up the rents, they were like, yeah, we don't care because everybody else is charging, you know, $950, $1,000. So when we raising up the rents, you know, we still at 100% occupancy. Actually, one person moved out. They just
wow.
Had to. Yeah, so it's
How long has that one been in process, Vlad?
6 months.
Okay. And were they all on month to month when you got in?
That's a great question. Yes, because that person, the seller, he didn't really care. Like I said, he is a really old gentleman. He didn't care about anything. He just, you know, he was holding it for the past, I don't know how many, 20 years or something like that. They were all month to month. And we started renewing the leases with the new increased rents. They all resigned. They all signed up again. You know, not a single person moved out. So we're still holding. I think now it's, you know, just one vacancy, but which is great because now we can rehab the unit and put it on the market at a different price. Yeah.
Yeah. So that guy, he was bringing in $20,000, $24,000 a month, living off of it, paying his taxes, didn't care. You're going to get up to maybe 38,000 if you hit 950 for each one. We all know, I think when you multiply that out by the year and take out your, expenses, you know, it's gotta be worth at least 3.3 million, something like that. Does that sound about?
Yeah. And additionally, it was the operations wise, we're improving stuff as well because, he was just kind of going with the flow, right? Like, you have garbage removal. And he didn't negotiate with the companies that were removing garbage. So we see that his garbage fees are double of what they're supposed to be. So now we reduced our expenses, our operating expenses. That's going to increase the value of the property even more. Because, I mean, they told him, hey, listen, you can remove the garbage three times a week and pay, let's say, $500. But typically, it's like $200. So we are cutting our expenses in half because he really didn't care. The funny thing is,
yeah, he's making money. I mean, it was covering all of his life expenses. He didn't have much motivation to get in and tweak all the dials, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And he honestly, he couldn't really, because when we asked for like his expenses and his P&L, he just gave us a box with papers. And he was like, here you go, dig through this. So that was pretty funny when he did that. And we're like, oh my gosh, now we have to look through this box of papers. And he didn't even know what stuff was happening at the property because he just trusted the property manager to do everything.
So do you have third-party management there now, Vlad?
Yeah.
How often are you actually physically yourself in Kansas City through this 6 months?
Actually, I was there once, but we have a person that lives 30 minutes away from the property. He's my partner, Joe, and he's visiting that property, I would say, biweekly.
Okay, yeah, probably good to do. So what does this look like for investors? I imagine you guys probably raised $500,000 to $700,000 on this.
You know, in this particular case, it was really a JV. We didn't have to raise a single penny on this. Five people came in, pooled our money together, and this is a purely generational wealth asset. We didn't have to raise anything.
So each person threw in 100, 150 grand, something like that?
It varied. We actually did less, but somebody came in, they needed to put a lot of money into a project, and they put, I would say, 35% of the equity in it, of their own.
Okay.
We all have different stakes when it comes to this project. That person just put more money into it. Yeah.
Gotcha. And your plan is just to hang on to this indefinitely?
Yeah. My goal, 10 years until really stuff starts, I would say, breaking down, or there's an opportunity to refi, maybe sell. But I would say 10 years is the goal. Sure.
Yeah, one of my mentors over the last 2 years, so I'm doing some stuff in commercial, owned shopping centers, things like that. I like national tenants. I like industrial property, 40,000 square foot and larger, stuff with more scale. We're kind of doing the same structures where a couple of us are, you know, in on the joint venture, bringing different amounts of capital. Maybe there is a raise, maybe there isn't a raise. But my mentor, Scott Scheel, is... like projects like you're in right now, and I don't know if this fits. I'm in a few myself I own completely as apartment buildings. And my original intention was, look, it's just for me, it's money that's sort of in a savings account and it's third party management. I'm not living off the cash flow. I'm using the money that comes in to improve the next unit and just kind of keep the thing multiplying. And I originally wasn't going to sell it ever. I was like, I'm just going to hold it forever, right? Really let that thing compound. But he had shared a few stories of his own. I was actually in Cleveland visiting his hometown looking at his projects this week. And we were supposed to go look at one of his early deals. It was like 40, 50 unit apartment building in Cleveland. He went in, he renovated the whole thing, had it looking nice, got it stable. We didn't go because the whole thing is a burned out shell now. And his advice, he's like, look, when you get these big assets, the temptation can be to hold them forever. But some of the issue is you do all the CapEx in the first 2 to 3 years, you get it stable. The asset is never going to look as nice as it does at the end of your CapEx. So really think hard about selling it at the end of the CapEx to sort of reap the biggest harvest, because you're going to have to do a whole nother round of CapEx year 7, 8, 9, 10, sort of when it wears out, like you were saying. And you might do better selling it early rather than hanging on to it for the long term. And certainly on the one that was completely burned down, that would have been the case for him. So I have this back and forth mindset, this tennis match in my mind of Warren Buffett on one side, who's saying, you know, the best hold time is forever. And you see how it can really compound over a long period of time. And then on the other end is sort of Scott, who is, you know, he's done, I don't know how many hundreds of commercial deals and tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of profit. And he's saying, sell it at the end of that 3, 4, 5 year, really consider selling the large assets on a regular basis and reaping the harvest. And I haven't really landed on one or the other, but my mind is certainly opening to, you know, selling it sooner than I maybe expected when I bought my, you know, 40, 50 units or something that I own now. Right.
Yeah. That totally makes sense, because ultimately you don't want to be an owner of like slumlord apartment complex or something that's falling apart, you know. So I know exactly what you mean, because my coach, Bill Ham, he has been in multifamily for quite a long time, and he says the same thing. Yeah, you can definitely hold on to it for a while, enjoy the cash flow and everything, but ultimately in 5 years, if you buy 1980 vintage now, in 10 years it's pretty old. So time to get rid of it and replace it with something newer. So that, because by then the B properties now will be C's. So if that's what your plan is, you know, so it kind of makes sense. It works.
Yeah. And I think I'd probably layer on. I mean, you talked about the JVs and you're the general partner and you're doing a lot of heavy lifting. And I think there's people on listening to this right now who would say, yeah, that's me. I want to build my wealth by finding deals, building them out, operating them over the long term. I would love to find a group of people and syndicate a deal. I want to raise $1 million. I want to raise $5 million. I want to buy something for $4 million, turn it into a $7 million. I want to buy something for $16 million. I want to turn it into a $25 million. There's people listening to that right now, and they're ready to do the work. They're ambitious, and they're going to get it done. And I think that's one way to approach sort of the conversation we've had even so far. And then the other end of that spectrum is the limited partner side. And I was always the general partner mindset, right? We're buying and we're selling and we're doing 300 deals a year. And it's like, you know, I'm going to bring the edge. No one's going to execute better than I am. Over the last year or two, and even now, the other thought when Scott is saying sell some of these assets, I might even pick the phone up and call my property manager today after we're done and say, hey, what do you think we could sell those buildings for? Maybe put them on the market. Let's test it. And if they sell, Vlad, I'm really considering just taking that cash and putting it into the limited partnerships with general partners who I know who are playing the game very well. And I'm going to make, you know, ideally, if all things go well, it will be 15 to 25% on my money and it will come with tax advantages. And I already am in as limited partner, and I really like seeing this nice, clean ACH transfer show up in my bank account on a quarterly basis from the, you know, one of the funds I'm thinking of. I didn't open a tax bill. I didn't call an insurance broker. I didn't take a call from a property manager. I didn't have to have money go out of my account 7, 8, 10, 15 separate times. All that crap happens on my residential portfolio that I own now. And I'm really tempted to go for freedom and, you know, really settle into the limited partner seat. And there's probably a balance of that kind of stuff for me or for the listener or anyone. But it took me a long time to psychologically be okay with giving up control of my money and being the limited partner. I would say that control and letting go of that control for myself became easier as I was able to spend time with general partners in that mastermind format like you're talking about, not at Jake and Gino's, but Scott runs one and I get to meet dozens of people and I get to hear them talk about their deals and I get to see that over time. I see which guys are growing and I really just have a chance to like examine their mindset over the long term. I feel a lot more comfortable betting on those players than I would, let's say, after listening to someone on a podcast, right? Yeah. What would you layer on to somebody being comfortable with becoming a limited partner in a deal like this?
Yeah, it's number one, you have to vet the team. I would bet on the team because you can have the best asset, but if the team is weak, it will surely fail, or you're not going to get the returns that you were targeted. So I would look at the team, look at the track record, and ultimately how it was performing over time. I like to have a relationship with, if I'm partnering with somebody and I partner with two teams so far, I know them for over a year. I talk to them on many occasions, ask them a bunch of questions. I know exactly what they're looking for. And also, I like the teams that are focused on the area. Like, I'll give you an example. If you have a team that's all over the place, they might not be focused. But if they're vertically integrated, if they're buying in one market and they're pros in a particular area, I like that. I really do. Additionally, if you see their track record and they have multiple exits, that's a huge plus as well. And of course, you see and you can ask others, oh, what do they think about this? There's many questions you should be asking. And also of that operator. And also take a look at the underwriting, right? Don't just believe them. Take a look at their model. Ask for it. They should provide you. Because it's, you know, there's nothing to hide here. And underwrite the deal yourself. See how conservative they are. Because in some cases, you can tweak few numbers in the model and make the numbers look great, right? But like what I do is on any deal that I'm in, we take the, I don't even need their model, right? I ask for the rent roll and the T12. We re-underwrite everything. And the way we look at a deal is we're trying to kill the deal. Yeah, I know, you heard it right. So we're trying to kill the deal. If we cannot kill it, then we in it. Because you can tweak the numbers and make the deal look great and be like, oh my gosh, look at this. The rents are great. Look at all this income. Yeah, I'm trying to really poke as many holes as possible. And if I cannot physically just like kill the deal, then yeah, I'm in it. Additionally, you have to look at the markets where you feel comfortable. I prefer Dallas. I prefer Houston, Kansas City, Carolinas. Many people prefer Florida. I don't know, Cincinnati, Ohio. I was just speaking with a guy with a team. He's crushing it in Nebraska. Not my market. People are like, hey, why didn't you go to Nebraska? I'm like, the deal looks wonderful, but it's not my market. I don't want to spread myself too thin. Be in Nebraska. Absolutely. Crush it there. I have a friend. He is doing great in Mississippi. I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't even considered being in Mississippi, but he loves it there. So, but I'm comfortable. I'm very hyper-focused on my market. So yeah, it's vet the team, I would say.
So Vlad, if we were doing a back of the napkin type of underwriting on a deal and we did not really have access to local MLS and a whole lot of data, right? We're putting ourselves in the shoes of somebody who's a W-2 employee making $100,000 a year, and they're going to put $50,000 into some guy's, LP syndication. Yeah. What would be, let's say, a good expense ratio on the current income for an apartment building? And what would be a good method for them to validate the expected rents that are described in that offering?
Sure. Yeah. I typically look for if the current rents are 20% below average market rent in that particular area. It kind of gives us a nice safety cushion where we can do some CapEx and we can hike up the rents. Additionally, what you can do is you can call a broker in that area and ask for the rents, right? That's what I do. I literally just call the broker, let's say, in a particular cluster of let's say Houston area, and like, hey, if you don't have access to various online tools and paid subscription things like CoStar, for example, a lot of people don't have access to it. CoStar gives you all that information. It's a very powerful tool that we use, I would say, multiple times a day.
It's $600 a month, and you got to commit for a year. So our accountant that's making the $100,000, he's not going to have that, right?
it's an expensive tool, but yeah, it helps you underwrite things quicker. It helps you see the cap rates and things of how everything is trading. Additionally, you can see all the background on the property, the loan, and everything. Whatever.
Yeah, it's a fantastic tool. How would you find the right broker to call in Houston. How do you go about finding that broker? Because they're not all created the same. They're not all going to give you the right answer.
Yeah. You know, there's multiple, there's big companies all over the country that sell multifamily, like there's Marcus & Millichap, JLL, you know, Cushman, Wakefield. Call, just find that person, call them, call multiple. Additionally, what I do is I literally just go on LoopNet, right? It's free. And find, let's say, that apartment complex and look for other ones in the area. And I call them and I say, well, do you have any vacancies? So what do you charge for a two-bedroom apartment if I move in a month? And that's another way of kind of seeing where the market is. So if they're saying they're charging $900, and the property you're trying to invest is charging, you know, $850, there's not much of upside. But if the property you're investing is like $600, then you'll be like, oh my gosh, look at this. We can really hike up the rents here. Or you can just ask another operator. That's another way, because we are here. You can literally just, you can Google or you can go on Facebook or LinkedIn and you can find a syndicator or another operator and they can help you. Because it's a very small community, very tiny community. And I mean, we're all friendly, I think. So if you want to, let's say, invest in Florida market, and I'm not in it, right? Just reach out to me and be like, so what do you think of this? What do you think of this operator? I'll be more than happy to help you or at least point you in the right direction or say, hey, listen, I don't know, but I know a person that does. And they'll guide you. So there's so many ways that you can find out, but don't just trust blindly, you know, really.
EOM.
Yeah, yeah. Really vet the person, really look for it. Because, I mean,
it's funny because like I interacted with some investors and, you know, 2021 GameStop. Mm-hmm. Right. If you were following the market, you saw GameStop go to $300 a share or something in a short squeeze. And I think they were using the term YOLO, you only live once. And this was the investing underwriting paradigm at the time. So let me just throw my money in blindly and just like chuck it. And I know people who literally invest like that right now. They never read the partnership agreement for the LLC they were going to invest in. They're provided. When they sign up for the investor portal, they never read it, right? They never had this. This is an attorney that never read it. she did. Yeah, I didn't read any of it. I just put my money in. This is a trained attorney with a law degree that actually said that. And I'm guilty of putting my money into a deal in it, almost the exact same fashion. There is a level of trust you develop with some people and they're good for it. And I think that people invest with me in that same way. They're not necessarily fine-tooth comb, especially not if they've invested in 3, 4, 5, or 6 of my deals. They've gotten their money back. They've made the interest and they got the return. But if somebody's doing this for the first time into even if it is somebody that you do know, you met them at the local RIA, you're face-to-face and you feel good about them, take the time to read the partnership agreement. It's not just the OM. Does the partnership agreement match everything that is in the OM? And to your point, I can't underline enough, actually make the calls to the broker. And it's not the temptation, Vlad, make the calls to the broker. They get one on the phone. They get some kind of an answer and it validates, yeah, it's a deal. And that's the end of it. You got to kind of call three to figure out what the rents are, and you got to be able to judge the basis. And like you kind of talked about the rents in our project being 600, and they're saying the brokers are saying 950, you feel good. But the other side of that in a deal where we're going to kill it is going to be the OM says that they're going to get 1100 rent, but you call three brokers and it's 900, 950, and 850. Well, how in the hell are they going to get 1100?
Exactly. Right? That, I mean, technically, like, just think about this. If you want to redo a roof or a kitchen, you're not going to go with the first contractor you go with, right? You're going to make a couple of calls. So it's completely normal to make those calls. And also, I do have some investors that know us for a very long time. And they're like, oh, I trust you. You're very conservative. You look for the best deals. You know, we're not going for a huge quantity. We're looking for quality deals. And we're like, no. Let me just explain everything that's going to happen here. The distributions, how we're going to communicate with you. They're like, no, it's okay. It's fine. I'm like, no. Just listen, because it's important. You got to know what to expect. And I'm like, we might decrease your distributions. We might pause your distributions. It never happened before, but we might pause your distributions in case some emergency happens. Make sure you understand all the risks, because there's risks everywhere, right? What we're trying to do is we're trying to decrease those risks as much as possible, right? By getting good debt, very low leveraged, getting great deals in great markets, good vintage, AB class, you know, something that's really going to protect you in the long run, because we don't know what's going to happen in 3 years, where the rate's going to be, how the market will be, right? So we can just try to predict. So we're trying to cover our bases. We're trying to basically minimize the risk as much as possible for the investor.
Yeah, and we're doing the same thing right now. We're buying land and working through the entitlements on the land. And it's probably the strongest piece of underwriting we have. Kind of the comps, right? Kind of Zillow, checking what new construction sold for. That gives us some indication of value. Better, we talk to builders who actually have pulled permits in the area where we're thinking of putting the project together, and we're trying to gauge and see what they paid on a per lot basis or what they spend to get those lots developed. And even better than that, calling the local governments, right? The building department, the planning commissioner for the county, whoever it is that will talk to us, and they've been invaluable sources of information. But I think a lot of people, we're always looking for black and white answers, and we're looking for one piece of information that's a green light or it's a red light. It's a yes or it's a no. And I caution against that mindset of rigid thinking. And when you get to two or three, you're having to just come up with a probability type of answer. Well, we think then, you know, the rent is this. We think the number is this. So the phone calls are such a critical piece of the underwriting equation. On that note, maybe we could switch gears. I think you were telling me before we hit record on today's episode about a multifamily entitlement project. Would you be willing to walk us through how you got the deal, maybe what you paid, maybe how much it cost to entitle, and maybe where you're at in that deal?
Yeah, it's really funny how it happened. Just really, really quickly, somebody called us, a person that was doing development in Florida, right by Sarasota, and they go, we have this land with 7 units on it, right? A lot of people were passing on the deal because they're like, so it's 7 units, who cares? We went an extra step, or he did an extra step. He called the county and he said, what can we do with that land? And they're like, hey, listen, this huge shortage of housing. If you can rezone that land, you can build, a lot of units on it. So we started exploring more, and just the high level, we were told you can build like 70 units. We're like, oh my gosh, this is the value. So about 8 people threw in 50,000, and we purchased it.
What was the purchase price? 400?
It was a little more than that. It was like 700, I think, or something like that.
Okay. How many acres?
It was 2.6 acres.
2.6?
Yeah. So it came out, but not all of it was usable, because it was like on a slant on one side. So, but overall, it was good land. And
how much was the net? Do you know, after the slope and the, how much was the net?
After everything was done, we can build 96 luxury, I would say luxury multifamily units on it. And then, to your point, which you mentioned, a second exit strategy, when we went to the county and asked, what else can we do here? They said, you can build hybrid. So lower square footage, 700 square feet, but you can fit approximately 210 units, which is affordable housing units. And the county said, since there's such shortage of housing here, we can fast track this, right? So, and this is exactly what happened. So instead of taking typical, a year to rezone, it took us less than 6 months, maybe 7 months, to basically complete our rezoning. And right now we're in the process of selling that land and working with the developer right now and giving them a choice. We can finish the rezoning with luxury, hybrid, or just all affordable. I mean, there's few things, few details that we have to work out at the end. But
so right now, the zoning change is done, but you're waiting for construction drawings for whatever that.
Exactly correct.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly correct. And from speaking with the developers, we can sell it for $4.5 million.
For the dirt.
Just the land.
When you get the construction drawings, is that when? Yeah. Okay, yeah. So they'll. Drawings. 46 grand per unit. And then meanwhile, does that 7 units still produce a little bit of carrying cost income, or are they vacant?
No, they're fully occupied and they're covering all our expenses, which is really cool. I mean, we don't have any distributions. We don't have any draws, but they cover everything. They cover our taxes. They cover the whole thing. And the monies keep growing in the bank, because we have to use that money to obviously do the entitlement and all the studies and stuff like that. And they're costly. Don't ask me how much everything costs, but I know just one study was like $12,000. And I'm like, do we really need that? And they're like, oh yeah.
Yeah. So a geotech study, and probably need a wetland study there. Yeah. If I had to guess, it's going to be at least 100 grand, maybe 200 by the time the construction drawings are done. But you're looking at upside, you know, even if you had to sell it way low, 2.5, 3 million, call it, it's still a $2 million profit. So it's a good, and it's a covered land play, right? It's like, there's a lot of land out there that's completely vacant land. Vacant land doesn't provide any income. So anytime you can kind of get on the deal where it's producing something, even if it was at a loss to say the mortgage that you were paying or anything, but to be in this position that you are, where it's covering some of these soft costs, man, what a cool deal.
Yeah, it was really very interesting. And then later on, we found out that there's so much activity going on there. So you have Walmart and all these larger stores within few miles of there. And another big commercial developer is building like 300 units there. So we actually reached out to them. So it's really interesting. I'm not a developer and I'm not a person that's doing this rezoning. So, but it's so interesting to learn how many things you can do and what you can do in this space, which is just unbelievable learning experience. I mean, I like my apartments, right? I know apartments, but I got into this land deal and I'm so glad that I did, because even though I don't know a lot of stuff that's happening in it, all the moving parts, because there's a lot of people involved. But it's so interesting just to make decisions and to see how it's done. It's really fascinating. You know, I'm just so happy that I'm in this deal.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's like some of the biggest wins that I know about ever occurring ever in real estate are coming from development and redevelopment. And what I mean by development, I mean changing the zoning and getting entitlements package, and then selling to the next guy who's doing the redevelopment. So whoever builds the 96 units probably makes, you know, $50,000 per unit. There's probably a $5 million safe profit for that builder to come out of the ground vertical there. They're going to make big money there. Now, in both of those are huge profits compared to flipping single family houses like you and I both still do to this day. However, the risk profile is so much higher, right? 700 grand, you don't get the rezoning, the market falls out, you're owning those 7 units for whatever next period of time occurs if the development sale does not occur right now. Now, maybe because it's the covered land play, you could wait. And if it took 7 to 10 years because the next cycle of development doesn't come around, fine, you're in the deal, it's covered, and you're okay, which makes that type of deal beautiful. But with those huge, you know, returns comes a huge amount of risk. So I do want to highlight that for everybody. Liz, oh my gosh, $4 million, $3 million profit. Vlad is just like, you know, he's lighting on fire. I want to do that. Be careful, make sure it's done right, and be aware of all the risks before you get into any of those kind of larger deals, yeah, right?
It's definitely like, I'll give you one thing. We were working on a flip here in New Jersey in Hackettstown. It's west by Pennsylvania. So what happened is the flip was going great, and then we started on it. So we're doing our due diligence, did a sweep for the oil tank. It was there on the ground. Okay, fine. It happens all the time. There's a bunch of oil tanks there. So we did a soil test. Guess what? Contamination. We're like, oh my gosh. So a sweet deal that we were hoping on betting on just completely fell through, and the whole contamination killed the deal. So things like that happen often. And, you know, I do flips still, even though it's not my primary focus, but I always partner with somebody. I always partner on any deal. Like I mentioned, I'm doing foreclosures and liens and violations and things like that. Even as a realtor, as a residential agent, I partner with a person, with a professional that's going to negotiate with the bank. So I'm not going to waste all my time negotiating with a bank, speaking, pushing papers back and forth, because it does take a long time. We ultimately here are business people. We're here to grow. So if you're going to take all the responsibilities upon yourself, you're not going to grow. You're just going to be busy going crazy. So it's really cool to partner up and really grow, and really just, you're going to see, as soon as you build a proper team, it's going to just explode.
Nice. Vlad, I know we're getting to the top of the hour here together. As we wrap up, I'm curious, are there one or two books that you would recommend to listeners, you know, real estate related, business related, but that had an impact on your career?
You know, there's few. I'm listening to the few books that really have something to do with mindset right now, because a lot of people are getting kind of, you know, down on everything what's happening. So what I'm doing is, of course, there's One Thing by Gary Keller. So it's really important to identify what you're really, really good at and be hyper-focused on it. There's another one called The Entrepreneur Roller Coaster. It's really teaching you on how to be a good business person and really what to focus on. And it even gives you like negotiation skills and things like that. And one thing that is really, really cool that I started my journey with, The Hands-Off Investor, right? So that book really teaches you on syndications, what to expect, the questions you should be asking, what you should be looking out for. It's a really nice book if you're looking to invest passively into a syndication or in multifamily. Hands-Off Investor, yeah, really good book. Check it out.
All right, cool. So if you could share the crown jewel of wisdom with yourself right as you were getting started in real estate, what would that be?
You know what? That's a great question. I know exactly what it is. Sales and negotiation. Everything that you do right now, you sell. You sell yourself every single day, all the time. So you sell yourself to your kids, to your wife, to your cats. In my case, forget about just sales, you know, when it comes to business. So when you have the craft, it's a craft of really listening, being present, and really knowing how to sell yourself, how to speak, how to negotiate, how to ask the right question and really listen, not just listen, but listen for the meaning behind it, what they really say. You will be incredibly successful. So sales and negotiation, they don't teach you that anywhere, right? So I've taken a lot of classes and courses and programs, you name it, I did. So that and marketing, of course. If people don't know about you and they don't know the product that you have, might not be the best, but if they don't know that product, they're not going to buy it, right? So sales, marketing, that's the two things you should be hyper-focused on.
Nice. I could double underline that and kind of expound on that for hours, I'm sure. What is the kindest thing anyone has ever done for you, Vlad?
Oh, boy. You know what? It's kindest thing. When it comes to business, I didn't know. I came from being a graphic designer, I didn't know anything about real estate when I started. So when I joined multifamily community, I had nothing to offer to the partners. And I said, guys, listen, I have nothing to offer you. In fact, I'm in a different state. Can you just, you know, take me in and just, I'll be a fly in the wall. I just want to listen to how you do deals. How do you discuss? How you underwrite? What do you look for? And they said, hey, Vlad, absolutely, let's go. And that took 8 months of me proving myself. You know, I was literally just like learning, absorbing, just like drinking out of a fire hose, as they were, as the word saying. So yeah, they took me in. They really saw my passion and what I really wanted to be. And of course, I quit my W-2 full time in real estate. And I'm so grateful when it comes to that. So I'll be forever grateful to people that gave me an opportunity, and I'm paying it forward.
Nice. Fantastic. So where can listeners get more about Zontic Ventures, or maybe you, Vlad?
Sure. Hey, listen, I'm all over the place. Very unique name, Vlad Arakcheyev. You can Google me. You can go on Facebook, on LinkedIn. I started Instagramming and TikToking. I'm doing like fun videos. I'm not doing anything overly long or complicated. I like to ride motorcycles, so I'm kind of combining real estate and motorcycles together. So it's been a lot of fun. So reach out on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm always here. And of course, you can go on Zontic Ventures. You just Google me, and I'm all over Google. And, you know, so reach out. I'm more than happy to help with any questions.
Nice. And we'll make sure we put the link to your company and some of the other things in the show notes. You can find at reidiamonds.com. Vlad, I got a couple pages of notes here. Had a blast. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I had so much fun. Thank you.
The REI Diamond Show is sponsored by Diamond Equity Investments, a private equity firm focused on buying and selling residential and commercial property throughout the United States. If you are an accredited investor seeking double-digit returns, you can sign up to review Diamond Equity's passive investment opportunities at www.fundrehabdeals.com. And if you're an investor who is seeking deals that you can buy, fix, and flip, please go to www.dealswithroi.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.